You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
G-Shawn, J. Will, and Max. The podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.
Game ended last night like around 12:15 by the time it was over. And I was hyped and then I couldn't go to sleep. And then it just, next thing you know, I'm here.
Right with you, Jay.
Still haven't learned. Keep trying to tell y'all, man. Gotta get that mid-afternoon nap in.
I know.
Ain't no mid-afternoon. When? Yeah. No mid-afternoon. You need
after
mid-afternoon.
This just in.
That's 3 p.m. This just in ends.
So get your...
I got boxing, 3:15, 3:30 Zoom on this show. That's over at 4 o'clock. Where's the mid-afternoon nap, brother? Mm. Afternoon's over.
Yeah. Well,
and we got
still an hour,
the dope
man.
Game. Yeah, we got it. We got it. We all right.
Yeah. Y'all be all right, man. Y'all can power through these four
look,
hours.
Man.
Yeah, we do like we to do a lot of complaining
tired.
About
the
being
Celtics,
tired.
Though?
Celtics look quarter. Tired to you?
Fourth quarter ran out of gas, man. That's what happens when you come out with a poor start.
Warriors are one game away from the championship. They win game five by 10 points, 104-94. But if you were to go through, guys, everything that happened in the game, what would you have told me, Jay? Like if you go through that game, say the Celtics going to hit all these threes in the second half. And
Max, if you were to tell me that Steph would shoot 7 of 22 from the field, not make 1-3, go 0 of 9 from the three-point line, I would tell you that Boston wins by 15. Easily, by 15. Like the star last night, you're going to hear everybody talk about it. They talked about last night and today, is Wiggins not only did a great job on Jason Tatum, even though Jason Tatum had a 20-plus point performance, he was nowhere to be found in the first quarter, which allowed them to get off into a great start. Draymond Green played extremely well early. And Wiggins scored 10 of his 20-plus, his 26 points in the fourth quarter and came through with clutch play after clutch play. And to me, Wiggins is a guy to talk about, but also Bob Myers and the way he's constructed this team. When it's all said and done, Key, he deserves so much credit pulling off the trade for Wiggins, getting him out of Minnesota, being able to get guys like Jordan Poole with the 28th pick in the draft, bringing up Gary Payton II from the G League, getting a guy like Kuminga in that draft, Kevon Looney, the way they used him. The pieces just really fit for this team, despite Steph Curry having
doing.
A poor performance.
Yeah
that's the key is your front office knowing exactly what to do and the personalities fitting in the structure of your organization. When Wiggins was acquired from Minnesota, everybody assumed he would be there for a short period of time. Then they would move on to go get somebody else in a trade. But then for whatever reason, they saw something different. Their plan was a little bit different. Maybe initially that was the case. They wanted to do something different. But then when they got him on campus, they said to themselves, you know what, this probably fits for us. This works for us. We want to keep him in the fold. And ever since then, all he quietly balling, right? He's not going to get the accolades because in Minnesota – when he was traded from Cleveland to Minnesota, everybody assumed based on where he was drafted that Wiggins would be the main guy. He would carry teams. And when he was only scoring, what was it, Jay? Probably 20 points a game. He was averaging 20 a game. People were like, And he didn't give you that dog mentality, it felt like. So people just assumed cast him away. Now you're moved in a trade as a people looked at it as a throwaway. So he's never going to get the benefit of the doubt because of where he was drafted at. But the only thing he's been – for the Warriors is Mr. Consistent, and every time you look up, he's contributing at a different level.
His shot and his defense have gotten better on the Warriors, but in many ways, Jay Key, like Iguodala once upon a time, he's drafted at a certain spot. He's supposed to be the best player. Hey, could he be the best player in a championship team? That's miscasting him a little. But when you bring him to the Warriors and fit him into that culture and into that pecking order in terms of the scoring, and he can play defense – all of a sudden, it's like, oh, my God, and he's the fourth, fifth best player on the team? Like, you know, that's Well, what an addition.
You know, that may not, he may not be the
right, but that's when he fits in terms of there's Steph, there's Clay, who's now coming off injury, Jordan Poole as a sixth man or whatever you want to call him. It's time for Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. Guys, Draymond Green at the post-game presser.
A win is a win, and, you know, obviously we have spoke about helping him, and I don't think he's been out there helpless. Like, that's the narrative. But everybody's doing their part. And, you know, tonight, a night that he didn't have it going, we found offense elsewhere, and that's kind of what it's been. But in the same token, if he's got it going, we're going to be heavy Steph Curry. That's just what it is. So the whole notion of this guy doesn't, you know, he doesn't have help. Well, he got 43. He's going to keep shooting, and we're going to keep doing all that we can to get him shooting. So it was huge, and that's good for us. You know, he was 0-for-9 from 3. He's going to be livid going into game 6, and that's exactly what we need.
I mean, look, if you're the Warriors, you're in a great position. You got Steph being angry at the fact he hasn't made a three. Was it 233 consecutive games in which this dude has made a three? 133 postseason straight games he's made a three. Did not make one last night. Now, I give Boston some credit for how their coverage was different. But still, the ball just couldn't go in. But for, you know, Draymond Green, the energy level felt different to start the game. That's different than what you saw in game 4 and game 3. He was involved. He was active. And Wiggins took the initiative, Key, coming out scoring right away. And also, you get bench points, man. You get 33 bench points. That's a game changer for your squad.
Yeah, you mentioned the bench when you start talking about, you know, whether it was Jordan Poole hitting the shot at the end there, or whether it was GP. Is it two
the
or
second,
three?
The second.
All his kids are GPs, but the second contributing both on the deep. That's a sneaky guy that they've come off the bench. People have forgot about him. Once he got hurt, it was kind of like, okay. But then he's been sneaky for them, coming off the bench, contributing both on the defensive end, hitting some shots down the stretch. Then Clay getting, I mean, I guess you could call it hot or whatever you want to call it, but Clay
when
changed.
He started stroking in the third quarter, I'm like, oh, here it comes, right? And then but then the foul. Game 6, Clay, boy, this is set up.
But that Steph Curry playing the way he played and having those other guys making up the difference is how you win games. I mean, and I said it yesterday, Jay. The question was asked, how could they win the game? I said, well, if Steph is handcuffed, the rest of them dudes got to contribute. Draymond had 8 points or whatever it was, but those 8 points, those little bitty 8 points came in a way that made you feel good.
It's like when people talk about this team knows how to win. And it's kind of vague, like, what do they mean? Warriors. That's what they mean, right? Starts with the culture. You mentioned Bob Myers, Gary Payton II, like all those things. But front office, they got the right coach in place. They have the right superstar in Steph, unselfish, the whole thing. They have the right supporting pieces, guys like Draymond. Draymond has not played well this series, and yet he figured out in, I'd say, two different games how to contribute to wins in game 2 and game 5.
Have you guys noticed that the start to each game really dictates who the winner of the game is going to be, right? Like when they came out, when Draymond played his really good game, like it was a defensive possession where he got a jump ball on Al Horford, and that kind of initiated it. And once again, I'm trying to tell y'all, last night when Jason Tatum came out passive and he wasn't aggressive, Jaylen Brown was trying, but Marcus Smart looked disoriented, and even though Steph wasn't making shots, the pace of the game was dictated by Golden State. Now, Boston fought back in that game, but to sustain that energy level, to get back to that game, you saw in the fourth quarter they ran out of gas, and the start of the game was imperative on why Golden State won the game, too.
We'll get into it a little bit more later. When Jordan Poole's shot went in, I'm like, oh, okay. Key, something good always happens for that guy. Like, it gave me that feeling
not
about...
Not necessarily true for Jordan Poole.
About the Warriors.
Oh, Warriors.
It gave me that feeling about the Warriors. Like, sometimes you just feel like the basketball gods are smiling on a certain franchise. Straight Talk Wireless, no contract, no compromise. Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, presented by Progressive Insurance. And that's the question. Did that shot change the NBA Finals?
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast.
All right, guys. It's the anniversary, right? Like, is this of maybe the most?
Could this be an anniversary?
The most memorable, maybe the most iconic shot. People talk about the iconic shots. Maybe the greatest shot of NBA Finals history. Michael Jordan push off Byron Scott.
Was that the, that was?
I'm final. Sorry, Brian. It was Ryan Byron Russell.
That was the final game, right?
Huh?
Game six.
That was it.
That shot won the
no,
game.
It was in Utah, but when you said probably the most iconic, it made me think. That's why I said I was thinking of Magic Skyhook in Boston.
But because that ended the finals.
Yeah, because that ended the finals.
One day someone will do that in game seven.
And it'll, that, correct? I think Mike retired after that shot.
Yeah, that was the first retirement. No, the second. Sorry, I forgot how many retirements there were. That was the end of the Bulls. For Michael Jordan.
Yeah, that was the end of it. That's when he retired.
One of the things I remember about that, it was the first time, because I started working on that, actually, that game. I had never known as an offensive player, I can use my hands the same way you can use your hands as a defender. Right? I don't know if you guys know what that means, but, like, literally, like, we play that 2-on-2 game, I could take your hand. Sam Cassell would do this all the time in the league. If I'm driving and your arm's up, I could take your arm and pull your hand down and bring your momentum back. And watching Jordan make that shot, I was like, oh, you can use the offhand to slightly push somebody as you move. And if the defense is moving that way, the refs, the momentum, you never really see it. It was
one of those cheating.
Yeah. Oh, it's next level cheating.
You do it in football, too. When I'm running a route and you're right by me and I hit you right at your hip level, and you're already going, like you're defending me, and you're already turned to run out. And when I go to break down and come out of my break, all I got to do is do just that enough, and you're going that same direction. But because of your momentum, we gonna separate a little more.
But when's the first time you realize that? Like, oh, I'm allowed to do that? Like, when's
I
the
get
first
away
time
with
a vet
it?
Did? Well,
I
well started, like a vet doing it to you, like, damn.
I started doing that in college, though.
Yeah, because
I was watching Michael Irvin, see? Jerry Rice,
that's what I'm saying.
You know, and I'm watching. I'm like, damn, he got a lot of separation. How did that happen? And then you start really paying attention
studying
to him,
the
watching
game.
Film. You're like,
and by
oh,
the way,
okay.
For MJ, man, like that shot, how beautiful. Because it's like it's almost like Ray Allen's shot that he made in the corner with the Miami Heat, right? Like there's certain guys that always go up and down in the same spot. It doesn't matter how fast they're moving laterally, east to west. That joint was this pullback, raise, bob, it's beautiful.
And that was a step. If you really look at it and pay attention to it, that was a step back before a step back. Because Jordan gathered himself.
Yeah.
After he pushed him, he gathered himself.
Yeah.
And then he just, boom, knocked it down.
Pure.
Man.
Look at Max. Max getting tickled to death, turning red, thinking about it.
What a way to
end it. We're back in 10 seconds.
Damn.
Here's Wiggins using a screen to get free. Drives the lane and flushes with a right hand.
He's just been fantastic, not just in this series, but throughout the playoffs.
Coming into this year, he was an all-star starter for a reason.
You know, something I've jumped about for sure. It doesn't get bigger than this.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM, Channel 80, and your smart speakers.
Okay, James, I see you on the board today. Let's go, James!
By Progressive Insurance.
It's impossible not to tell that it's me.
Yates is a very interesting playlist today. So
don't do that to Yates.
So
James rocking.
There are some.
Hey, give me another fireball.
Listen, Key. This is I mentioned it last
give
segment.
Give me a Jaeger bomb.
Jaeger bomb.
Jaeger bomb. Yeah. Bring you back.
Bring
you back.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Put it this way.
Jaeger bomb?
There's no Cisco in that track. Jaeger. Let's put it that way.
Jaeger bomb.
Jaeger bombs. You've been there, Key. You know what time that is.
I've had Jägermeister one time in my life.
The deer.
It was great because I did it. I shot a commercial for it. So it was great. I went over to Prague. We did the whole deal. Jeez. It was good. Really good. It was
so
really
first
great.
Class. I went over there. Why did you give me the thumbs up? It was really great.
It was good. It was... They were great company to me. I had no,
Prague is like every European city you see in the movies. They shoot in Prague, right?
Always.
And they hear, and when you hear that in a spy movie, that's Prague.
Jason Bourne.
I almost called you Jay, but Max, so true.
Yeah.
You know, it's the first time I've ever been. And I'm like, but Jaeger, so we did this whole deal. And Jaeger, part of my deal was I got all this Jaeger. So they shipped a bunch of stuff to me. I gave it away, but I'm talking about Jay. It might have been a couple hundred boxes of Jaeger.
That licorice taste, like I've had bad experiences.
You talk about
down that path.
I think Jaeger's nothing wrong with Jaeger.
It's just a bad. Yeah. It just leaves a bad deal.
It's heavy.
It gets the job done. How about that?
And they gave me this machine, and you pour. It was
a Jaeger machine.
Yeah, it was a machine that they would pour. You poured a Jaeger in. It was just like a coffee machine. Like,
he's got a liquor license in Prague, Jay.
It was crazy. And then gave it to one of my good friends. I gave it to him and his family, and they used it for their son's bar mitzvah.
Oh.
You know?
Jaeger at the bar mitzvah,
yeah,
huh?
It was
L'chaim.
Yeah, so, those little kids was running around.
Yeah,
here.
they were lit.
Yeah,
it was right.
Wait a minute, today I'm a man, right? Give me that Jaeger. So one of my favorite Parcellian expressions that that Key you have said on this show, and boy, I've used it since then, is something good always happens for that guy, or something bad always happens for that guy. Talking about what? Watching a guy at practice runs around, looks good, but somehow the play doesn't go his way. And another
right
dude,
there's the ball in his hand. Yeah.
Yeah. And another dude just looks okay, but somehow he's in the right place at the right time, right?
Ball bounces right his way, scoops and scores. The other guy, the ball bounced to him, but it went out of bounds.
We all know players like that in all different sports. You're like, man, he's not good, but somehow it's in the clutch, there he is, right? Well, that's how I can apply that to teams, too. There's some moments where I'm like, something good always happens for them. And when Jordan Poole hit the shot at the end of the third quarter it wasn't half court, but it was, it wasn't a three. It wasn't just a regular three either. It was
it was between the 3-point line.
That's his second time, though, this series.
He's made a lot of momentum like shots. That's
game two.
Yep. He hit from half court.
Yep. But when it ends, I always feel that way. Like, I used to feel this way about the Bulls as a Knicks fan. Damn, they hit the shot heading into the half. They gave them a 1-point lead, and it was like a prayer shot, right? Like, something good always happens for them. When that shot went in, guys, I don't know how you felt. I felt Warriors were going to win the game.
I felt like they were going to win the game all the way from the beginning, though, to be honest with you, just because they, you know, the Celtics made a little bit of run in the third quarter or whatnot. I still felt like, yeah, okay, we got the fourth quarter to go, and I think they'll be okay.
Jaylen Brown, how much did Poole's three affect the momentum out of that third quarter?
It was a big shot, but third quarter, we played some really good basketball. We just didn't take care of business in other quarters.
Yeah, I mean, so you don't take care of business in the first quarter and the fourth. I mean, two very important quarters. That's a pretty challenging thing for the Boston Celtics. And I give Jordan Poole and Gary Payton II a lot of credit. Like, you know, Derek White had one bench point at the half. The Boston Celtics had one bench point at the half. And that's why when you look at what Jordan Poole and Gary Payton II brought to the table in the entire game, you know, 31 bench points, those two combined, like that gives you an extra punch, and that helped. But also, man, for the Boston Celtics, guys, like in the fourth quarter, like they made their first three in the third. They created a great run. And then in the fourth quarter, you had a time where there was Jordan Poole and Stephen Curry on the court together, and they were targeting those guys. And then all of a sudden, they started taking a lot of poor shots. They started rushing their shots. The game didn't – there wasn't any more fluidity to the game.
And that's where you really saw the Warriors start to tick the game over in the fourth. And that's Boston, once again, careless with the ball. 18 turnovers. I would question anybody. I would say at least 10 of those turnovers were unforced turnovers. So, yeah, I'm giving Golden State a lot of credit for their defense. Their defense was off the charts. But there are a lot of times throughout the course of the game, you're like, yo, Boston, what the hell are you doing? Why are you making careless passes, which led to 22 points by Golden State? So bench points and points off turnovers. If you're Ime Udoka, you're like, yo, this is game four all over again.
But don't you give credit to Golden State for creating those mistakes, punching the ball out like GP did, doing those sort of things, putting people in pressure situations.
Look at this pass by Marcus
Smart.
Look at this.
Well, that was a bad pass. That's what I'm saying, about
it. At least 10 out of the 18 turnovers, and like I said, in
but
my comment.
Right here, that's great defense.
But that's Jason Tatum throwing his arms out, extending his arms into the trap, looking for a foul call all the time. And I'm saying it's game five, dude. Don't do that. Play through contact. He made a comment in game four where he's like, I got to stop looking for the fouls. Yeah. I got to start absorbing contact, getting to the rim. So when he comes out lackadaisical in the first 6-7 minutes of the game, you're like, what kind of
Jay,
tone
you're going
is this
next,
setting,
you're
man?
Going next level on careless turnovers. You're like, it's not just the most obvious careless turnover. It's stuff that pro in this situation
Jay
needs to
like
know.
Jay sounds like a damn coach, though. So he needs to go. You need to coach because you sound well, because, like one right now.
Well, Golden State played their ass off. Like, I give them a lot of credit, especially when Steph doesn't play well. But you're looking at Boston like, all right, you guys are playing into this, though. Like, Marcus Smart easily lobbing the ball over the top in the third quarter. You're like, why? There's 22 seconds on the shot clock. What the hell are you doing, man?
Halftime coach Jay. I'm going to roll you in there to the locker room and give him that talk.
Yo, I'm just saying. And then Marcus Smart, like Jordan Poole, you know, Marcus Smart gets a rip through, right? Uh-huh. And Jordan Poole doesn't get hit in the face, but he throws his body back.
And
Marcus
Smart
gets called for the foul. Yeah. Then he complains to the ref about the possession before, gets a technical foul. You're like, yo, this is championship experience teams, right? Like, that's what Golden State is. And it just looks like when you need them to the most, Boston looks
instead
young.
Of Marcus Smart turning to the ref and being like, just, you know.
You know calls are going to go against you. You're on the road in game
five. You'll see tape later.
I'll give you another one, right? And this is where Draymond's so great at it. They get into that whole spot in the third. And when the quarter's over, Jason Tatum tries to take the ball. And he walks towards the bench. And Draymond, literally, in the midst of all the Boston Celtics teammates, walks over to the Boston Celtics bench with him. Like, yo, give me the ball. Like, there are little things that championship teams do because of their experience to try to rattle young teams. And it just looked like Boston was continuously rattled in the fourth quarter the same way they were rattled in the fourth quarter of game four.
Now, Boston, that's the first time they have lost following a loss in these playoffs. They were 7-0 heading into that game. If they are able to bounce back at home, which they have done, coming off of consecutive losses, that would be something new, right? If they didn't win, then they would force a game seven. Now, let me tell you something, Jay. You mentioned, you know how those commercials say, don't be that guy? My job is to be that guy, so I'm going to have to do it to both of you right now. What? Steph Curry in game five. There's nothing wrong with having an off night when they change their defense on. You make sure that you're not going to hurt them. You've carried the team in the finals so far. Okay, no doubt. No problem. He's the MVP still. But coming up, I'll tell you when that cannot happen or it undoes all the good work he has done.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric E-Bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's electricebikes.com.
The Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max Podcast.
Curry shedding himself of white. Free for three. Pops it in and out. And three Celtics under the basket. Horford rebound.
0 for 9 from three. He's going to be livid going into game six. And that's exactly what we need.
We're never worried about number 30. I just know he'll respond.
Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, ESPN Radio, Sirius XM Channel 80, and your smart speakers. Steph Curry was asked by Monica McNutt. Well, you'll hear the whole thing. Monica McNutt grabbed Steph after the game, and they talked about his three-point streak coming to an end. But listen to the whole thing.
I have to give you a stat. Don't hold it against me because I'm probably the first person to tell you. So now you didn't hit a three. That's the first time.
I know what it is, but I don't know how many games it was.
233.
All great things come to an end at some point. But I'm glad I'm hearing that stat with a smile on my face.
All right. I'm going to be that guy right now. Oh, as Key would say, put some yeast on it, the snap, crackle, pop, the media narrative, whatever people want to say. Doesn't bother me. We'll do it anyway. Steph Curry has had a sensational finals so far. And his subpar play in Game 5 when they changed the defense and everything, that's all right, man. You don't have to be a supernova every single game of the finals, unless you're like Michael Jordan. Everyone else is going to have a bad game, whatever, right? No big deal. And by the way, your teammates picking you up, one of the reasons they have that healthy culture is Steph. Give him credit. But I have to say this. The Celtics have this is the first loss they've had off a loss in these whole playoffs. So unless they have another loss off a loss, this is going to a game seven. Steph can't have a game like he had last night and lose the series in game seven. You cannot wind up back in San Francisco, have a subpar game, and the Celtics win the series. If that happens, Jay Key, then the great work he did so far, that's not what will be remembered. And the narrative, which you guys claim guys like me are writing, but are actually just reading, we don't write it, the athletes write it, is going to flip from, this is Steph's greatest finals, et cetera, oh my God, MVP top 10 player. That can happen in game five. My point is, can't happen in a game seven loss. Go ahead, guys.
I don't have a problem with you saying that if they go to game seven and he struggles in game seven, it doesn't change the way that I feel about Steph Curry. It doesn't change anything. Sometimes you don't play your best. And if they win, doesn't mean anything. If they lose, yes, I'm sure him, fans, everybody else would like to have seen a little bit more. But that's okay, Max. It doesn't make him a less of a player, Jay, because at game seven he misses a few threes down the stretch. Doesn't change anything for me.
I hear your point, Max, and I feel where you're going because you've been on that the whole time, and it's something to pay attention to. I just have a tendency to extract the win from this in a team sport, even though there is something on the line individually for Steph. And also for me, this to me just kind of epitomizes even more so the greatness of Steph, right? The fact that this dude has gone 233 consecutive games with making a three.
Including the playoffs.
Now, there was a different wrinkle on how Ime Udoka and the Boston Celtics defended him.
Which you predicted.
Which we talked about, right, leading up to this game. There was no drop coverage. Al Horford, Robert Williams, they were more up on all the ball screens. They kind of pseudo-blitzed him. He got the ball out of his hands, 8 assists, by the way, to make some plays to Draymond, other guys to make plays happen. So he let the game develop. But I do believe that Steph is one of the highest IQ players we have in the game. So there's going to have to be a wrinkle on top of the wrinkle going into game six, because that wrinkle isn't going to work anymore. Because throughout the course of the game, his legs just seemed like they were heavy. Yeah. Like his shots were short. It wasn't like the defense distracted him in the first couple of quarters, but he got himself looks. He just couldn't get going. That is credit to Boston, but I do believe that he will get himself going again when it matters.
By the way, game, nope, I agree with you. In a certain way, it highlights his greatness in Game 5 because as an unselfish player, as a guy who establishes the culture there, other guys step up. He's still playing defense. Like, even if he's not a great defender, you can see his body has changed, et cetera, et cetera. He doesn't hit a three for the first time in a billion years. It points how many threes he's hit. I'm not talking about Game 5.
You're talking about Game 7?
I'm saying,
talking
about Game 7. Of course, I'm saying, like, now, and Key,
he's focusing on
Max,
Ian.
Can I tell you why I may be set up for that for you on Game 7?
Now, good.
Just your argument.
And it might not get
mine,
to Game 7. But
so what's been happening defensively for Golden State, Boston's been seeking out Stephen Curry on every matchup, right? So they're forcing him to defend. Mm-hmm. Also, what you saw last night is they are denying him the ball from the time he gets over half court.
Yep.
So they're making him work exponentially more to get his shot off, which you hope towards the end of a game, it takes his legs away, which equates to his shots being short. Now, if they continue to play that way, which I expect them to do so, if they are able to get a Game 6 win, this will test the endurance of Stephen Curry more than anything, because now you're getting targeted on a defensive end and they're trying to take your legs away. You have to work for each and every possession, which means you have to run more to get the ball.
I want to get back. I hear you. I get it. But I want to get back to Key, your thing about it doesn't change your view of him. To me, the view of a player while they're active, while they're still in championship games, it's a moving target. Without us realizing, even if you say, oh, it's not going to affect my opinion of him, if he has a poor game, if it gets to a Game 7, it may close it out in Game 6, but if it gets to a Game 7 and he has a poor Game 7 and they lose the championship, the way we all perceive him shifts a little bit. If he has an enormous Game 6 or Game 7, they win another championship, he's Finals MVP. How can that not? This is how you define your legacy right now.
One, his legacy is already defined as far as I'm concerned.
Fully?
It pretty much is. I mean, you start off by he changed the game just on the shots alone, mm-hmm. on the changing of the three-point shot. That changes. He's won three championships.
Mm-hmm.
He's broke records and whatever else and all the other things that accolades. It's already set.
But
he can add a little bit more to it.
Yes.
If you want a little more icing on the cake, so to speak. But it won't change it if they lose and he has a poor game.
Look, you're right in the sense that who cares if you're top 15 or top 10? Because you wake up on a Tuesday, you redo the list.
You do.
And, yeah, whoever. I'm saying in the history of the game, these moments determine whether players like this are remembered
all
as top 10 all-time players.
All it does for me, Jay, and Matt, I mean, all it does for me is it solidifies Max's so-called argument that, see, Game 7, he played bad. This is not LeBron James, he's not Kobe Bryant. He shouldn't belong in the top 10.
I don't want to say that. I'm looking forward to him coming through.
Of course you don't want to say it.
No, but I'm looking forward to him coming through. I'm just saying that's what's great about coming through is you don't have to come through. It could go the other way.
I just think if they come through and they win a championship, Key, to me that will cement his spot in the top 10. But if they don't win a championship and he has a lackluster performance like Max is talking about in Game 7, and even if they never win a championship again and his stats get him there, there will be a lot of people. I will not be one of them.
A lot of people going to do
that. I will not be one of them that will debate whether he belongs in the top 10 because they're going to talk about finals, MVPs. They're going to talk about all these other things.
I would think if they won and he got the finals MVP, people will still have, well, he's right outside because I can't take out Will. He's not better than Tim Duncan. Why would I move him?
Let me give you an analogy. With Dodgers pitchers, two of them, two mm-hmm. of the great lefties in Dodgers history, because you're a big Dodgers fan.
Sandy Koufax.
No, forget Sandy Koufax, all right? Clayton Kershaw.
Okay.
Greatest regular season pitcher of all time, yes. Arguably, right? Postseason, not the same guy quite. You could argue that, but Key, it's like, look at the, okay. Fernando Valenzuela, great pitcher, but in the playoffs, one of the greatest of all time.
Yeah, he's money.
You brought up Koufax, another Dodger lefty. Greatest regular season pitcher of all time, in the playoffs got even better.
Yeah.
If Clayton Kershaw really can't be compared to Koufax because he wasn't Valenzuela in the playoffs, but if Kershaw was Valenzuela in the playoffs, he's Koufax. He may be better than Koufax. What I'm saying is
He took a little steam, got hit a little bit.
So and when you're splitting hairs among the all-time greats, those enormous leverage moments matter. So I'm saying if Steph has a great Game 6, Game 7, whatever it is, wins the championship. That's the Finals MVP. If it wasn't for him, they wouldn't have won. He's the best player on the floor, either team. When you do the final analysis, when it's all said and done, he has that. If he doesn't have that, then you're comparing him. Well, the thing about Kobe Bryant is the thing about Shaq is, you know.
He had 16 points in a win.
I know, that's what I'm saying.
If they win, it's not the same.
Like, you know, four out of the five games, he's been prolific, and he had 16 points in a win. So I hear the argument that you're building towards a game seven, but, like, the body of work that he's done up until now has proven
no doubt.
What if they'd have lost this game and he had the 16 points? What would you be saying today?
I'd say the series would be over if it wasn't for Steph already. So you still got a chance to win the series because you got Steph. Game five, you're allowed to have a bad game out of five.
So you wouldn't have said in game five he was 0 for 9 from 3. If Steph would have been balling like he's supposed to, they would have won. See, this is what I'm telling you.
No.
They're at home. They're supposed to take the lead. You wouldn't have said all that.
No, but if they got closed out, if they went to Boston and it happened again and they lost, yes, I would. If they get to a game seven and they're on their home floor, as I always say, fate of the universe on the line, yes, I would. You're entitled to have an off game.
No, but see, I think if they'd have lost this game,
I wouldn't kill him in game five.
And he played... I guess you could call it poor, whatever you want
by
to call
standard.
It.
Yeah,
by his standards, you sitting here Pinocchioing us right now.
No, Key, no, I got nothing man. To hide.
You would have been. You know, this whole thing is set up for a game seven and a defining moment in your eyes for Steph Curry.
I don't know if it'll get to a game seven because
I think
game
it's
six
get,
Clay might be coming up. We'll get to that a little later.
I think it's going
to
get to a game seven.
If it gets
Boston's going to defend home court.
If it gets to a game seven, am I on another planet? Like, how could everyone not see it that way? Like, these are the because moments I, that define these, yeah. your...
It would be great but because our story would be, Jay, our story would be 250-pound guy landed?
Yeah, 240 pounds.
40-pound guy landed on his ankle. He came back. I mean, it would be a great story. There's no question. We would...
The book would come out. Yeah, it would, new generation of sports fans
no
would be,
question,
oh, of course.
No it would be that story.
I'll take it back to baseball again. Reggie Jackson struggling in the playoffs and this and that. They brought him in to win a World Series and all this. Hits three home runs in game six. They win the World Series. If you take that away, he's not the same Reggie Jackson. Those moments were a great player, Hall of Famer, but not Reggie. Like those, these biggest moments that live in our memories forever. How can we not say they're important?
I think I had a Reggie bar once upon a time.
Yeah, it was like $100,000 bar. Remember?
Yeah, it was $100,000.
Yeah, basically.
Reggie bar.
Basically, yeah.
$100,000 bar.
You don't remember $100,000 bar?
That used to be a lot of money, Jay.
Yeah. No, not real money. Candy bar, man. The Reggie bar. I remember that.
Crowd Jay hangs out with, they actually buy $100,000 bars.
That's not the crowd I hang out with.
Keyshawn, Jay, Will, and Max is presented by Progressive Insurance. Insurance for motorcycles, boats, and RVs. It absolutely is one of the crowds you hang out with.
There you go.
For protection on the road and on the water, see how much you can save at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE and progressive.com. So, Russell Wilson, guys, pulled off quite the sweet surprise. That's what it says right here. Catching the goodies singer unaware as she posed for photos outside an event for 10-1 rum in Los Angeles. So Russ was gearing up for his first season with the Broncos after his, you know, obviously his whole career with the Seahawks. He's won a Super Bowl. He got to another Super Bowl. He only had two seasons under double-digit wins. One of them was a 9-win season until his first losing season last year. He posted a video of the moment on Instagram. Channing Crowder said, "I love him on the field, but he's a square." Here's the video he posted on Instagram. You can see on ESPN2 right now. "I love him on the field, but he's a square." Guys, is Wilson a square?
Why do you call a dude a square, though, man?
But I mean, is it even a terrible thing to be a square?
No, it's not a terrible thing. Man. It's a great thing to be a square. I'm square.
Right.
So,
yeah, now you are.
Well, I mean, yeah, you had some point you got to grow up, right?
Yeah. Used to have some more angles in there. Now it's
you know, I've just been thinking about this, I don't know, for a while now. I don't think the Denver Broncos are a Super Bowl team. Mm-hmm. Okay, I just don't. With Russell Wilson, with Aaron Rodgers, with Tom Brady, I just don't think they're a Super Bowl team. But it goes beyond football for me when it comes to Russell Wilson. I want to understand why people feel a certain way about his personality, so to speak, Not necessarily his play on the field, because his play on the field, it is what it is. But it's just his personality, Jay. Like, he's a square. He's a lame. They would call him a sucker. All the things that you look at and you go, well, that's not the way you describe him, because he is a different type of person. And I wonder if when he's in the locker room, do his teammates look at him like Crowder? Do they look at him and say he's a square?
Can that hurt in the locker room if they feel he is?
I think it could hurt in a locker room. See, so when you're in a locker room amongst people, if they think you're a teacher's pet, see, I was a teacher's pet, but they also knew that the teacher's pet would also get an earful from me. I mean, the teacher would also get an earful from the pet. My head coaches liked me. They dealt with me. My position coaches dealt with me. The front office dealt with me. Owners dealt with me. So a lot of times, players look at that and they say, well, he's just trying to be like them. He's not one of us. He's square. All that. But they didn't treat me that way because they already knew. They knew that I knew the long game. See, it's a long game that needs to be played. It's not the short game as a professional athlete. I also think, Jay, that when you look at a lot of our black quarterbacks, so to speak, they got a different type of swag that come with them. It's a little more urban, you know, whether it's the Cam, whether it's Lamar Jackson, whether it's the Geno Smiths, who else is out there? That's a Kyler Murray's. They just come with a different type of swag that seems to be a little more authentic, I think, than the way people are looking at Russell.
Man, like, to me, this is a bigger kind of thing within the black community, be real with you, right? Like, there will be a lot of people that would say, is Russell Wilson black enough? Like, is he black enough, right? And which is the most ignorant thing that I've heard. Because, Key, like, to the whole authenticity, like, he is authentic to himself and who hell he wants to be, right? Like, now, that may not be culturally accepted by everybody, but, like, yo, shouldn't we praise a dude that is an incredible stepfather? And there's also this whole comparison, to be honest with you, about, you know, he's married to Sierra, who came off being with Future, who is a culture type guy, right, in the rap game. So people like to compare those two lifestyles and what that is. And, you know, is he really, truly urban enough? Like, you don't have to be urban enough. Russell Wilson, keep being your damn self.
I think that's the question.
Well, that's what I just said, though.
I know.
I want to follow up.
Hold on,
that.
Max. Let me finish point for a second, because this is the kind of stuff that really annoys me and it bothers me. Because I feel like we don't reward that type of behavior as much, or it's not as spoken about as much, because we like to focus on let's ride or things like that that make him seem quote unquote cheesy
corny.
Yeah. And it's like, yo, but that's who this dude is.
No, that's who he is to me.
And that's okay. Like, that's black too to me. And that bothers me that happens within our community. It's personal.
I just want
to
follow up on that. I hear what you're saying. I get the point. Like, what, being a good father somehow, that's not what you would describe as black enough. Like, that's a problem if you think that, right?
Well, I'm saying it's characterized.
But to me, it's not so much that necessarily he's a square. Because, Key, inside, you're a square.
Oh, I'm
but,
a square.
But
I'm,
it's wrapped,
I'm scared to death.
But it's wrapped up in swag, right? So
yeah.
You can travel in different circles.
Absolutely.
And get, okay. Andrew Luck, and now he's taking the racial component out of it. I get it. That dude is a square, right? But somehow, it comes off to me as purely authentic. That is who Andrew Luck is. My question about Russell Wilson is, if he's a square, is it because he's a square or because people think, I don't know how authentic
So in other words, you think he is playing to the cameras.
He's wondering if that's what people are feeling.
But Max, who doesn't who we are change over time? Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, depending upon who you marry, like, that changes over time because I don't understand this thing. Like, oh, he doesn't understand who he is. Like,
I'm not saying that. I'm saying, do you think there's a component of people being like, there have been players we know who you say, he's playing that part of himself.
I don't think so at all. I think he is. That is who he is.
And he has to keep being that.
That's who he is. He can't be something he's not. We know plenty of him. I can tell you one thing. He outkicked his coverage, though.
Thanks for listening to Keyshawn, J. Will, and Max, the podcast. Check the guys out live weekday mornings from 6 to 10 Eastern on ESPN Radio.